It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. How are your brackets holding up in the NCAA basketball tournaments, may I ask? The American Gaming Association's new survey says Americans will bet $15.5 billion on March Madness. 31 million people betting with a traditional sports book or casino. Call in with your questions or thoughts about sports betting, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Chad Foose is Gaming Chief Financial Officer for the Oneida Casino. Chad, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
I'm doing well. So Oneida Nation, now over a year into its sports betting operation, what are your takeaways as far as your expectations for this aspect of the casino business?
Well, I can tell you our customers like it. They like the fact that they have a place to go that offers legalized sports bet booking, and we're seeing a lot of interest grow the longer that we have it. And so we've been in operation with this new endeavor for just under a year and 4 months. So we started in November of 2021.
Are you seeing, in terms of that customer base, is it return business, people coming back? What do you see there?
You know, it's a combination of a lot of our clientele, of our customers. So we have new customers, we have existing customers, we have people who are just trying it as it's a new offering. But we're seeing new foot traffic, existing foot traffic, and, you know, so far from what we know, they like the experience of it. We're trying to give them the best experience possible, and we're trying to give them the best entertainment as possible.
What is surprising about this part of your business? What didn't you expect?
I don't think we expected the amount of people we would see at some of the major events. For instance, this past weekend with the NCAA basketball tournament going on, we were extremely busy. We recognized that last year at this time, but last year at this time, we were only about 3.5 months into this new business. But, you know, we're really surprised about the amount of foot traffic of people coming to our facility.
You know, I watched that absolute nail biter, Marquette University ultimately falling to Michigan State on Sunday in such a game. Are upsets, though, generally good or bad for a casino's business?
I think just in the general public, people like to root for the underdogs. obviously, you know, unfortunately, with the Marquette game, we're not able to offer or take bets on that game. Or if Wisconsin would have been in the tournament, we weren't able to take bets on those games either. But there was a lot of interest, a lot of people in our sports bet booking room that were watching the game, betting on other games. So it was a great experience. But yeah, I mean, just like yourself, probably, I know me personally, I love watching the upsets and the underdogs.
Well, explain how that works a little more, why someone cannot bet on a game of the UW or say Marquette. Explain how that works.
What happens is that we have a compact with the state of Wisconsin, and through the negotiations in order to offer event wagering or sports bet booking, that was one of the things that we negotiated that the state had looked at as maybe it's not ideal at this time to allow betting on in-state Division I sports. We're not unique, though, of the approximately 30 states that offer sports bet booking. There's a combination of about half of those states that do not allow the same type of betting that we don't allow, and that's in-state Division I sports.
Sports betting legalized, as you mentioned, through a compact between the state of Wisconsin and the state's federally recognized tribes. Do you think our tribal communities seeking changes to further expand sports betting or further amend these compacts, gaming compacts?
I believe that the 11 nations, which includes ourselves in the state of Wisconsin, I believe we'd be naive to think that there wasn't any dialogue. I know that we were the first ones to be able to offer event wagering, sports bet booking in the state of Wisconsin. I do believe that, you know, the other 10 tribes or nations are most likely researching, you know, is it a good business model for them? Does it work for them? You know, I can't really answer for those other tribes, but I would probably, no pun intended, I'd probably bet that they're looking at, is it a good business model for them and where they are?
We see Potawatomi, Forest County Potawatomi, take that step with their casino hotel seeking to open a sports betting business in Milwaukee. Would that development affect your business?
So with sports bet booking in the state of Wisconsin is a little bit unique in comparison to how maybe the rest of the industry does it. And for instance, there's a couple of different ways that you can make bets in the state of Wisconsin. One is obviously on property and talking with a cashier that has in our facility a lot of knowledge of to help you. Second one is through a kiosk, but the third one is through an app. But in that app is pretty limited to the areas where you can make those bets. So it's not statewide. We don't foresee it being statewide at any time soon. So therefore you are kind of, you're related to only offer this app within your reservation boundaries on specified pieces of land in the state of Wisconsin. So we don't see as much as Potawatomi from the sports bet booking side being competition. But, you know, it's great that, you know, the rest of the tribes are researching it and they're going to help grow the tribe sports bet booking in the state of Wisconsin.
We're talking about sports betting with Chad Foos, Gaming Chief Financial Officer for the Oneida Casino. You can join in the conversation with your questions and your experiences along the way, 800-642-1234. Chad, as you mentioned, the app with online sports betting through an app, how do you ensure the app is only accessible on the Oneida properties and not beyond them?
Great question. We put a lot of effort into ensuring that the parcels of land that we can offer the sports bet booking on, we use a technology, geofencing. It's not a new technology, but it's enhanced every single day that we see making updates. So we geofence our locations. The best way to think about this is a invisible electronic dog fence that you'd put around your yard. Your dog can only go to a certain area before he's not going to want to go outside of that area. Same with sports bet booking. We geofence an area and those individuals can make bets in that area, but once they go outside of it, they're no longer able to make bets. So the app does not allow you, it allows you to see what kind of bets you can make, but it does not allow you to physically make a bet.
You mentioned the flurry over March Madness. What else are casino visitors often betting on?
Some of the biggest events in sports bet booking world, obviously we just had one in February, and that is the Super Bowl. So that's for a single day event. That's probably the biggest event that we will see in Wisconsin for bets being taken. The second biggest one is obviously the NCAA tournament for the duration of March and into April. We'll see a lot of traffic happening, a lot of bets being made. And then you have your, you know, the NBA finals, you have the NHL finals, you have the World Series for baseball. You know, a lot of those big events like that draw a lot of interest to wager.
So how do you prepare for the Super Bowl? What do you do on the casino side to make sure that you're fully prepared to do it?
We ensure that we have enough employees to handle that amount of traffic. We don't want to give anybody a bad experience. Essentially, the casino is about entertainment, about a social experience. So the more services, the more employees, the more hands-on that we can give our potential customers is great. So, you know, for this past weekend, we overstaffed a lot of our areas, you know, a lot more foot traffic. We have a lot more cleaning that needs to happen. We have a lot more food that's being served. We have a lot more bets that are being taken. It just compounds as we get busier and we try to bring on more employees to help with that.
A lot of places are really struggling to find those employees, to find those frontline workers. Are you?
Definitely. We are not immune to the hiring challenges as other businesses are also. So we've tried to come up with creative ways to entice employees. You know, we do a lot of recognition for our employees. We do a lot of small tokens of appreciation. So we try and you know, we want to retain all those employees as everybody else does. So yeah, it is a challenge.
Chad Foos, Gaming Chief Financial Officer for the Oneida Casino. Colin, with your questions and thoughts about sports betting in Wisconsin, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The Oneida Nation amended its gaming compact with Wisconsin nearly 2 years ago, adding sports betting to its casino offerings late last year. We check in on its sportsbook gambling operation. Call in with questions and comments about sports betting. The number to call in is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Chad Foos is Gaming Chief Financial Officer for the Oneida Casino. And Chad, you know, let's turn to the Packers. Aaron Rodgers, all eyes on there and whether his era could or may or should be over in Green Bay, as, you know, he wants to play for the Jets next season. How would that move, if it goes through, affect sports betting around the Packers?
Well, just speaking about the Packers in general, I'm not so sure if it's with a quarterback or an individual player either coming to the Green Bay Packers or leaving the Green Bay Packers is really going to change the minds of individuals who want to bet on the game itself. I guess that'll to be seen come the fall if the quarterback does decide to move on. But, you know, just living in Green Bay, growing up in Green Bay, everybody just likes the team as a team. You know, you have your favorite players, but I'm not so sure that people are betting on the games because of players. I would venture to guess they're betting on the games because they are the Green Bay Packers and they are their home team in the state of Wisconsin.
Okay, so Packers bigger than Aaron Rodgers. So what are the odds then that Rodgers actually moves to the Jets or stays with the Packers?
I think you know as well as I do. That's a tough question to answer.
Okay, so how about this? You know, there is a lot of gaming terminology out there. How much should a person know to place bets responsibly? How much do you need to know about this terminology?
That's a great point that you bring up, responsible betting. So, you know, we do encourage it. We are a supporter of the organizations that look at gambling, Gamblers Anonymous and so forth. So we are part of those associations. But responsible gambling, you know, we do have different regulatory functions that we have to have in place. One of them, know your customer, kind of understand what the customers are doing, especially if they're betting. Their betting patterns seem to be different than a normal betting pattern. I don't have what a normal betting pattern is right now, but we do monitor. We do watch for individuals who may be betting out of their means.
How do you take action on that?
We have different ways that we take action. You know, we have individuals who come in and they just tell us, you know, we don't want you to take a bet from us anymore. And we honor that. And we actually encourage people who don't believe that they can responsibly gamble to do that. You know, we put a block in our system. So if they do attempt to make wagers or bet at our casino, we can identify them and let them know that, you know, you are the ones that wanted to not allow yourself to take a bet at the casino, and most of them are pretty good with that. Unfortunately, we do have a process in place that they can overturn that also. So, but it's a good first step if they identify that there's an issue and that we can help them with that.
How easily can it be overturned by the customer?
From that standpoint, they really meet with their security director, and they have a sit-down conversation to go over, the whys, would we want it overturned and so forth. So we do have essentially an informal interview with the individual, kind of find out why they want that overturned.
The American Psychiatric Association essentially defines gambling disorder as uncontrollable gambling. So does the casino view it as a health problem, as a health issue?
We have a lot of regulatory functions that we need to follow, and part of those regulatory functions are identifying some of the things that we had just talked about. So we do follow the regulations to a T. We are very highly regulated, and that also allows us to offer integrity to our bets that are being taken. So with our regulatory functions, we have a we have to do some of these initiatives. I'm not going to get into all the details of what we do, but we do at points in times assist with ensuring that individuals cannot bet outside of their means.
We're talking about sports betting with Chad Foos, Gaming Chief Financial Officer for Oneida Casino. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Chad, opening day for professional baseball next week. How are the Milwaukee Brewers expected to do this year? And what do you see in terms of sports betting and casino traffic there?
I think baseball is one of the most intriguing sports to begin the season with. There's so much hype about the baseball season. You have 162 games. It's a long season for them. We've seen a lot of interest in individuals wanting to bet on their favorite in-team professional team, the Milwaukee Brewers. So we do see a lot of interest in that right now. And mostly what they're taking bets on is, are they gonna make it to the World Series, and are they gonna win the World Series? So they kind of have those future bets that are out there right now. So we see our share of those future bets happening.
Major League Baseball had famously issued this lifetime ban against its all-time hits leader, Pete Rose, over betting while he was with the Reds. Does the casino make efforts to ensure that athletes or coaches or others are unable to place bets on their own matches?
We really look to the, first of all, the answer is yes, we're willing to work with any professional sports organization to do that. The second thing is we talking with the professional sports organizations, we really look to them to make sure that the code of ethics that they have with their teams and their players are in place also. So it's really a combination of them working with their players and us working with the organization.
Turning to State of the Tribes address, Secaucus Chippewa Community Chairman Robert Van Zyl said there are an estimated 60,000 illegal gaming machines across the state that are operating. Should law enforcement be doing more to crack down on illegal sports betting?
60,000 machines, that's a large number. So, with the chairman appears to be talking about is that, they view it as a major problem when he's pointing out a number of 60,000. So we have read a lot of the studies. The American Gaming Association has, as you have quoted at the beginning of the interview, had commissioned a study. And there's other studies that have been commissioned in the state of Wisconsin. So the chairman wasn't too far off what his thoughts about illegal gambling were. So we all know it's happening. And, we are looking at the enforcement mechanisms of how that happens and what needs to be done. So we are staying on top of it also, yes.
Just in the last couple seconds we have left, is a casino impacted by a potential recession. What happens to casinos in a recession?
Prior to 2008, most casinos were, I would say, immune to the recessions. But once 2008 hit, I think throughout the United States, I think most Native American casinos, as well as commercial casinos, realized they are no longer immune to recessions or retraction of the economy. So we did recognize a retraction of our revenues during the 2008 to 2014.
The Great Recession. We are not immune to recessions.
Correct.
Chad, thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Chad Foos, Gaming Chief Financial Officer for the Oneida Casino. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Electric cars represent less than 1% of the vehicles on the road in Wisconsin, but the market for them is growing fast. There are new tax credits available, and the state is planning expansion of charging infrastructure. Danielle Kading reports that adoption of electric vehicles in Wisconsin is likely to accelerate even more.
Pop in there.
George Bousset is already sold on electric vehicles. On a gray winter day, he heads out on the snow-covered streets of Bayfield in his 2021 Chevy Bolt. Bousset, who lives just south of Ashland, says he's already put about 17,000 miles on the car since he and his wife bought it 2 years ago.
I just love this car. This is the favorite car of all the cars I've had, and I'm 74 years old, going all the way back to a 1957 Cadillac.
Electric vehicles are still pretty rare in Wisconsin, but that's changing. Last year, the state registered nearly 14,000 of them, an increase of more than 53% from 2021. And now it may be less costly for others who want to buy. The Federal Inflation Reduction Act, passed in 2022, allows eligible buyers up to a $4,000 tax credit for a used EV and up to $7,500 for a new one. The credits come with complex requirements, though, and not all EVs will qualify. Bousset says his Bolt can go up to 250 miles on a full charge. That's plenty for his day-to-day use, but the availability of charging stations on long road trips is still a concern. Francisco Sayu is Emerging Technology Director of Renew Wisconsin.
People are saying, like, you know, I want to buy an EV, but it's really hard to go anywhere with one. So it's keeping people away.
Jeremiah Brockman is president of the recently created Wisconsin chapter of the Electric Vehicle Association. He says the availability of charging stations is about to get a lot better.
If you're in the market for a new car, you should definitely consider an electric one. But if you do a lot of road trips, you might want to wait 2 to 5 years.
Wisconsin is preparing to build roughly 60 fast charging stations. The state is receiving nearly $79 million through the bipartisan infrastructure law to install them. Caleb Vanderweel with the Wisconsin Department of Transportation says chargers will be placed every 50 miles on designated roadways and within a mile of exits. He says those would include major routes in northern Wisconsin.
We're hopeful that at the end of the day, if you have an electric vehicle and you live in one of the southern metro areas of the state, that you'll really have that comfort in knowing that if you're going to the Northwoods, that you have somewhere to charge along the way.
As automakers ramp up production of EVs, they're still facing supply chain challenges. And in Wisconsin, there's an additional challenge due to the way the state regulates electricity sales. The federal law requires stations built with federal funds to charge a rate for electricity sold. In Wisconsin, only regulated utilities are allowed to sell electricity to the public. Governor Tony Evers' budget would allow companies to sell electricity at charging stations without being regulated like a utility. Some GOP lawmakers, like Green Bay Republican Senator Rob Coles, say that change is necessary.
We're not going to get the build out that I think we deserve because these electric cars are coming. You know, whether you like them or not, the citizens buy them and they want to be able to charge them up. And we're going to be an outlier within the Midwest if we don't do this.
George Bousset and his brother Bill are drinking lattes at a Bayfield coffee shop. Bill and his wife are weighing whether to buy an electric vehicle. He says federal tax incentives certainly play a role.
You know, this is a major financial decision for us. and range is certainly a consideration.
Bill says they'd like an EV for both short and long road trips to visit family. They're planning to buy in a year or two. By then, he hopes the state and the nation will have made great strides in building a network of EV charging stations. Danielle Kading, Wisconsin Public Radio.
It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We explore American Sign Language, or ASL now, deaf awareness and culture. As hundreds of thousands of people use ASL as a primary language, according to the group Lead with Languages, call in with your questions and experiences, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jacqueline Corey is an American Sign Language interpreter with ASL Partners in Appleton. Jacqueline, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thank you for having me on.
Good morning. Well, I should say welcome on this side as a guest.
Well, thank you very much.
So what inspired you to become a sign language interpreter?
For me, I think it was a lot different than other interpreters. Most interpreters have a deaf family member, a deaf friend that they grew up with. I didn't have that. I just had an innate knowing that I needed to explore the language from a young age.
And so you just decided to start learning, or how did you take that step?
Yes. So I attended college at UW-Eau Claire, go Blue Golds, and there was an American Sign Language class offered. That was the first class that I had available to me, and I took it, and I took every succeeding class I could after that to immerse myself in the culture and the language as much as possible. And I became conversationally fluent by the time I graduated, but not quite interpreter fluent. I had to go back to school to get my degree in order to become an interpreter.
What is that step of actually becoming an interpreter and going from someone who can sign to someone who is licensed to sign? What does that change?
Yeah, so there are two schools left in the state of Wisconsin where you can get your interpreter's license. One is NTC, North Central Technical College in Wausau, and that's a two-year degree. And then Milwaukee, UW-Milwaukee still has a program. They have a four-year degree. If you already have a bachelor's in anything else, you can go to a two-year college and get a two-year degree in interpreting to be a community sign language interpreter. And if you do not have a bachelor's, you have to go to a four-year program to get a bachelor's in interpreting.
Okay, so that is the path. Are sign language interpreters, would you say, easy to find in Wisconsin, or is it difficult?
We were hard to find before, and post-pandemic, it is even more challenging. A lot of the interpreters are freelance interpreters. Green Bay has a fair amount of freelance interpreters. I believe the western half of the state over by Eau Claire has a ton, if not only, freelance interpreters. Down by Madison, Milwaukee, areas, because they're a little larger, they have a few interpreting businesses and companies available. We, ASL Partners, are one of the, I believe, two companies up in this area, northeastern Wisconsin, that has a full-on company.
And so do you get a call for when your services are needed? How does that work?
Yes. So we have interpreted for any deaf person or hearing person, for that matter. It goes both ways, right? People often forget that. In any situation that they need, we do medical, we do weddings, funerals, births, deaths, Weight Watchers meetings, AA meetings. We've interpreted in the prison systems, in the schools, in colleges. I mean, you name it, whatever they need, they call us and we show up.
Can you explain a little bit more about the licensing process in the respect of passing the state exam, keeping your license active? What does the state require?
Sure. So there is a state certification you can get, and there is a national certification you could get. The state certification looks a little bit different. The national is a little bit more intense. I currently do not have my national. I only have my state certification. The national is a pretty intense exam. It is not regulated well. And so oftentimes people, even who have been in the profession for many, many years, 20, 30, 40 years, have a hard time passing the national exam. And it makes people shy away from maintaining the profession for a long period of time.
Do you have to be recertified each year on a state level?
Yes, we get, I believe it's every other year we get recertified. We have to keep up with our license by getting CEUs, much like teachers used to have to do. And then we have to keep up with all the new and upcoming exams. Oftentimes when they come out with a new exam, because legally things have changed. Gosh, I've been in this profession for about 10 years. Legally things have changed probably 3 or 4 times in those 10 years. I've had to go back and retake all the new exams. They have not allowed me to be grandfathered into the old systems. So it makes things, again, rather challenging for people who want to stay in the profession, because it's like, I've already passed this exam. Why are you making me take another one? So it's definitely challenging to find interpreters.
The National Association of the Deaf says that each country has its own sign language. Should there be a universal language? What are your thoughts there?
Personally, and obviously this is just my opinion, I think it would be glorious if there was an international sign language. There is one international sign language. It's called Gestundo. It's used primarily at United Nations meetings, and I would say 5 to 10 people throughout the entire world know it. So it's not very widely used. But ASL, obviously American Sign Language, is not universal. Every country has its own sign language. American Sign Language is derived from French Sign Language, actually. So a lot of our base signs that we use in developing American Sign Language came from France and French Sign Language.
And you say, you know, the language has its own rules as far as grammar and sentence structure and some of those foundational things. Can you just share an example of a sentence and how you work through it and what it means?
Most certainly. So what most people don't think about and why sign language is different than spoken languages is that it's three-dimensional. It's not two-dimensional. It's very visual. In some aspects, it's almost like drawing a picture in the air. So the example I always like to use that one of my old instructors taught me is the sentence, the house on the hill is on fire. So in American Sign Language, we would sign hill, because the hill has to physically be there, and I would show a hill in the space in front of me. I would draw it in the air. Then I would sign house and put the house on top of that hill. It's very visual. The hill has to be there. There has to be a land structure before a house can be built on top of it. And then I would show fire and sign fire, but I would show it exactly where the house is, showing that it's inside the house. It's incredibly visual. Sign language does not have articles. It doesn't use, you know, sign. We don't sign the words to, the, it, for, from, any of that. If you're following true ASL sentence structure. And so it kind of naturally condenses itself. It's very unique. It's very different. It's very logical. And I think a lot of students could use it in, even hearing students, most definitely. And we have a lot of special needs students who use it as well in other aspects of their learning. And it could help propel them forward in multiple ways.
It's just remarkable all the things that are going on at the same time in the interpreter's brain. I mean, we often hear how we're poor multitaskers, but, you know, what you are having to do as you are interpreting, you know, in a live situation, you know, what do you think of that and what is possible?
Yeah. So, oh my goodness, interpreters, I like to call it the circus in our heads. We're attempting, obviously, I don't think anyone can do two things exactly at the same time, but quite quickly after one another, we can. We're attempting to do three things essentially at the same time. I'm listening or visually taking in the sign language that someone is producing at this moment. I am processing what was said 1 second ago, and I'm producing either with my voice or on my hands what was said 2 seconds ago. And all of that has to be done as simultaneously as possible. And so by the end of the day, I don't know about other interpreters, I think they would probably agree with me, your brain is mush. I mean, you just go home and you're mentally exhausted. But because you're essentially a human telephone, right? And mm-hmm. and you don't, no two things are ever interpreted exactly the same. Because it depends on the client that you're working with and their educational level and their background. So you have to pick and choose words that match that particular person, that particular situation to the best of your ability at a very rapid speed.
That is just fascinating. How many hours might you interpret at a time? What's been your record?
Oh, goodness. Usually, typically, if our assignments are over 2 hours long, we will send two interpreters and we will switch off every 20 to 30 minutes, because the ability for your brain to continue processing language at that rate for a lengthy period of time, it just dissipates rather quickly.
Mm. Jacqueline Corey, Wisconsin-based American Sign Language interpreter. Join in with questions about ASL or interpreters. What's on your mind? 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Inspired by a color-only program suggestion, we examine American Sign Language, ASL. Call in with questions and comments about sign language and culture, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jacqueline Corey is with us, Wisconsin-based American Sign Language interpreter in Appleton. Let's take a call now. Linda in Milwaukee area. Hi, Linda.
Hi, good morning. I was just channel surfing in my car this morning, and I heard you guys. So kudos to you guys for having some education about us. I'm a medical interpreter. I won't say what health system I work with, but I'm a staff interpreter with a health system in Wisconsin, southeast Wisconsin. I hail from the Milwaukee area. I've interpreted for over 30 years. Just some clarifications on what I heard the person saying. I didn't catch her name. I apologize.
No, it's okay, Linda. It's Jacqueline.
First of all, the International Sign Language is not called Gestuno. It's Gestuno, G-E-S-T-U-N-O. So there's been limited success with using it. I did see a research paper that says in the Eastern languages, it's my understanding in spoken languages, anybody can call in and correct me, that the past is referred to as before you. And the future is referred to as behind you. In Western languages, it's the opposite. A lot of references in our English that we use in the United States refers to the future, something you look forward to, or if you look back at a memory, it's the opposite.
So a very clear distinction. Linda, while we have you here, I just want to ask you, what is the most challenging aspect to be a sign language interpreter in the medical setting? What do you grapple with?
What I get really frustrated about, and I'm kind of a vigilante, I am a hard of hearing interpreter. There are also hard of hearing interpreters out there. I use a hearing aid. I see every day when I'm at home and I take off my hearing aid what commercials are captioned and what are not. I think there's a great health disparity with information. I'm very frustrated. The federal government, as of last year, is putting out a lot of commercials about medical issues, about human trafficking, about sunscreen, about all kinds of things. And none of them are captioned.
That's really interesting. Linda, I just want Jacqueline to join in here on that aspect of closed captioning that displays the audio portion of a TV program as text on the screen. Jacqueline, what are your thoughts? How could TV closed captioning be improved?
Well, I think while it's a good thing to have closed captioning, because of the differences in language, American Sign Language versus English, and the word order being completely different, while closed captioning is better than having absolutely nothing, and I think as of the early 90s, the ADA mandated it for all, you know, TV shows and movies. I'm not sure about commercials at this point, but I don't see why they wouldn't have it included because it can only benefit them. But as far as closed captioning goes, it would be best, absolute best, would be to have an interpreter on a small box in the corner of the screen and have someone actually signing what is being said on the screen to the deaf individual, because then they're getting it in their first language. When you're reading closed captions, that's written in English. That's deaf people or hard of hearing people sometimes, depending on the situation. That's their second language. So they have to try to take an extra minute to turn all the words around and make sense of them, and it's a little bit more challenging when it's not presented in their first language.
Talking about sign language with Jacqueline Corey, Wisconsin-based American Sign Language interpreter. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Jacqueline, I want to turn to the Super Bowl for a moment. And Justina Miles became the first deaf woman to perform ASL at the pregame and halftime shows. And then at a press conference, Justina signed to a male interpreter who spoke her words.
To really bring that empowerment to millions and millions of Black deaf people all over the country who've never really seen that before. And so they should feel inspired, and that's the same way I feel. I feel like that is truly lifting every voice, even my voice.
What was your reaction to that moment in the Super Bowl?
Oh, I think, first of all, she did a phenomenal job. I'm really happy that they were able to give her interpreter services. And it's up to each deaf individual as to whether or not they want to keep the interpreter that is offered to them. Now, of course, a lot of times they don't have the option, right? Male versus female, black versus not. And they sometimes have to take what they get, which is awfully sad because of the lack of interpreters that exist out there. But I think both of them did an absolutely phenomenal job. I was super excited that at least the Super Bowl in some capacity was able to include some sort of sign language.
It was seen for that audience and seen for that moment, a real change, hopefully going forward. What is your mindset and ethics toward culturally sensitive and you know, culturally appropriate interpretation?
Yeah, so I think the biggest struggle that people have, especially if they need an interpreter, is they just find someone that they think will work. They don't clarify and make sure that that person is certified. And oftentimes that can do more damage than good.
So, you know, we've also heard about how language changes and how, you know, signs will change over generations. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are on evolution of the language and sign language being a living language.
Oh, my gosh. Every language is a living language, right? Sign language is no different. So over time, things change. Young kids used to not say things like, well, I guess I'm kind of older now, but things like LOL and BRB, and now they have shorthanded everything. And sign language is no different, right? So over time, things grow and change. Things get shorter. People want to produce things faster. And there are signs that exist for things that didn't exist before. We didn't have COVID. I mean, COVID existed, but we didn't speak of it in typical everyday conversation as much as we do now. And so before, there was not a sign for COVID. We would have to fingerspell it. Now, obviously, somebody along the way came up with a sign for COVID. Now, culturally speaking, in order to be respectful and appropriate, unless you are deaf, or hard of hearing and included in that deaf community, in that deaf culture, you are not allowed to create new signs. Even as an interpreter, I cannot make up a new sign for something. I have to kind of wait and watch and see what the deaf community does with that word. Sometimes they'll kind of, for a month or two or longer, negotiate a specific sign. Now that we have the internet, it's really nice, of course.
You're always having to learn, always keeping up with the profession. Jacqueline, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kate. I truly appreciate your time.
Jacqueline Corey is an American Sign Language interpreter, works for ASL Partners in Appleton. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.